Let's go ahead and open to Job chapter 38. Verse number 22 is where we're going to begin. We're in the best part of the book of Job because this is where God is doing the talking. Job has asked, perhaps even a little bit of a demand during the midst of his turmoil, that God come down and explain things to him. Explain to him why these bad things are happening when Job knows for a fact he hasn't done anything to deserve them. And so God shows up and he begins to quiz Job like a teacher would quiz a young student who is certain that they can understand all of the very detailed and advanced information many, many grades level above them. And so the teacher, sometimes in a very ironic way, will say, okay, let's see what you already know and understand that is going to be necessary for you to comprehend this other information. And it doesn't take very long for the student to realize, oh, I guess I'm not ready to understand all the other stuff. I've still got plenty of other things to learn first. And so that's kind of the lesson to be learned from the book of Job for all of us. When we demand of God, you need to explain yourself. You need to tell me why you're letting this stuff happen in my life, because it doesn't make any sense to me why you do that. And of course, the answer of God would be, you don't understand the majority of what I allow to happen. What makes you think you're going to understand this specific thing? Instead, we as human beings need to just trust God and move forward in our faith, doing what we can do based on what we already know. And so here is God again, and he's going through a lot of things about nature, things that God has created that Job doesn't understand. And while we, as, quote, modern scientific peoples, end quote, understand some of the mechanisms here, we still don't understand all the details. And so we shouldn't get so full of ourselves thinking that we know more than Job, therefore we should understand better what God does. Because God is so far above our intellect that the difference between us and Job is minuscule in the information we have. Job 38:22, God says, have you entered the storehouses of the snow? Have you seen the storehouses of the hail, which I've reserved for the time of trouble, for the day of battle and war? Okay, Job, can you tell me about snow and hail? Do you know where it's at when it's not actively falling out of the sky? He uses here the idea of hail as the artillery that will sometimes fall upon enemy armies, but not always. Sometimes hail is just hail. It comes because of, you know, updrafts and cold and warm fronts coming together. The things that scientifically we're aware of that are involved in the manufacturing of hail. But the question still can't be answered. Where's hail when it's not in existence? Verse 24. What is the way to the place where the light is distributed? Or where the east wind is scattered upon the earth? So, where is sunrise? Well, it depends on what time of day it is, right? And where does the east wind start? For that matter, where does the west wind start? Where does the north or the south or the southeast wind? Where does it all start? Where's its beginning point? And we, of course, can't answer that. Verse 25, who has cleft a channel for the torrents of rain and a way for the thunderbolt to bring rain on a land where no man is, on the desert in which there is no man, to satisfy the waste and desolate land and to make the ground sprout with grass? So first of all, can you predict the exact path of either a raindrop or a lightning bolt? And the answer is nope. We can come up with a scientific model that might predict with some reliability those sorts of things, but the exactness, nah, not even close. And then God asks the question of Job. So Job, since mankind is the climax of creation, how come rain falls in places where there aren't people and brings the land to life? And that would have been a puzzlement to poor Job. Verse 28, has the rain a father? Or who has begotten the drops of dew? From whose womb did the ice come forth? And who has given birth to the frost of heaven? The waters become hard like stone, and the face of the deep is frozen. So Job, tell me what you understand about rain, dew, ice, snow, frost. Tell me the mechanisms involved in the freezing of water so that it becomes solid. And before any of us think that we can describe all of that, answer this question. Why is it, of all the material known to us at this point, H2O, water, is the only thing that becomes less dense as it takes on the form of a solid? Everything else becomes more dense when it takes on solid form. This is why ice floats. So explain why that's the exception to the rule. Other than, of course, that's the way God created it. Verse 31. Can you bind the chains of the Pleiades? The Pleiades, of course, we know that star formation in the sky, the constellation, seven sisters in some places. The Jewish people thought of it as a bracelet. Or loose the cords of Orion. Orion, we think of as the hunter. We've adopted that from, I think, the Greeks and the Romans for that constellation. They thought of Orion as a fool that needed to be tied up. So who binds up the bracelet and who looses the fool that's in the sky? Can you lead forth the Maseroth in their season? That's the constellations, which depends on the time of year, which constellations are more easily seen. Or can you guide the bear with its children? And this would be Ursa Major, Ursa Minor, the Big Dipper, the Little Dipper, the Big Bear, the Little Bear. They thought of it as a moth, interestingly enough. So can you guide the moth or the bear around up in the sky? And again, there is no way in the world that Job would have any control over these distant astronomical objects. Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you establish their rule on the earth? So, do you know what governs stellar and planetary motion? Even to this day, astronomers cannot account for all of the motions and interactions of astronomical objects, because somewhere out there, there is information that they have not yet collected. Maybe some far out object, or maybe it's dark matter, you know? That's one of the big things right now is dark matter which we cannot see, we cannot measure, is somehow affecting all of the seen matter. So we're really not all that much better off than Job was on the God scale. God is so much farther above us, being the one who created all these things. Can you lift up your voice to the clouds that a flood of waters may cover you? So can you make it rain when you want it to rain? And yes, we do have some procedures that we think will force water to be precipitated, but it's not 100% effective, is it? Can you send forth lightnings that they may go and say to you, here we are? Yeah, we can create lightning in the laboratory, but can you control where it strikes? I mean, with precision. Nope. Can you, verse 36, who has put wisdom in the inward parts or given understanding to the mind? Now, that's an interesting question. Who has given us the ability to think and to choose? I mean, you can talk about chemistry in the brain, but can you identify where that information capability came from? And no, you can't. Evolutionary science, as much as it's touted by evolutionists, has no mechanism to explain how information came into existence or how the mind came into existence to process that information. Verse number 37. Who can number the clouds by wisdom? Or who can tilt the waterskins of the heavens? When the dust runs into a mass and the clots stick fast together. Again, that's a question of, can you control the weather? Can you hunt the prey for the lion or satisfy the appetite of the young lions when they crouch in their dens or lie in wait in their thicket? So, can you feed the lions? Oh, yeah, you could throw them some meat that you caught and all of that, but can you actually provide them the wild experience where they are going to be guaranteed to catch everything that they go chasing after? That's messing around in the balance of our world, isn't it? And there is no certitude as to how that's going to play out when we start messing around with it. Who provides for the raven its prey when its young ones cry to God for help and wander about for lack of food? So now we're going into the animal world. Who is it that makes sure that there's this cycle in place that allows the animals to live and reproduce and to be fed in that process and to breed in that process? And of course, it is God that did it. If it was up to us to make sure that it happens, we'd screw it up. Chapter 39. Do you know when the mountain goat gives birth? Do you observe the calving of the does? And this is not just knowing something about the reproductive cycle of these animals. It's, are you like suddenly aware when the next baby goat is born on the mountain way up high above you? Do you know when that doe gives birth out in the forest within a few miles of you? Are you suddenly aware of what's going on there? And of course, the answer is no. Can you number the months that they fulfill? Do you know the time when they give birth? We have a general understanding of those things now, but we still do not have precision. When they crouch, bring forth their offspring, and are delivered of their young. Their young ones become strong. They grow up in the open. They go out and do not return to them. Talking about life cycle here. The fawn, the kid of the goat, the fawn of the doe, they grow up and they leave mom and go out on their own. Who has let the wild donkey go free? Who has loosed the bonds of the swift donkey, to whom I've given the arid plain for his home and the salt land for his dwelling place? So can you tell me about, you know, wild donkeys? He scorns the tumult of the city. He hears not the shouts of the driver. He ranges the mountains at his pasture, as his pasture. He searches after every green thing. So a comparison between the domesticated donkey, which these guys used all the time as their tractors and as their pickup trucks of the day. The wild donkey won't put up with that stuff. They're out on their own, doing their own thing. They don't serve mankind. And what about the wild cattle? Verse 9, is the wild ox willing to serve you? Will he spend the night at your manger? Can you bind him in the furrow with ropes, or will he harrow the valleys after you? Will you depend on him because his strength is great, or will you leave him to your labor? Do not have faith in him that he will return your grain and gather it to your threshing floor. So basically, again, the contrast between a domesticated ox and the wild ox. If you went out into the wilderness thinking that you're going to be cheap and not pay someone for a domesticated ox, you're just going to grab yourself a wild one, that is not going to happen. Yeah, you might capture it, but it's going to take an awful lot of effort to try to break it to carry a yoke or to stay with you doing your jobs rather than running off back into the wild again the moment, the moment you untie it from wherever it is that you've got it hobbled or bridled. So God is basically saying, yeah, you've got some domesticated animals, but there's plenty of wild ones out there that you have no control over. Verse 13. The wings of the ostrich wave proudly, but are they the pinions and plumage of love? For she leaves her eggs to the earth and lets them be warmed on the ground, forgetting that a foot may crush them and that a wild beast may trample them. She deals cruelly with her young as if they were not hers, though her labor be in vain, yet she has no fear, because God has made her forget wisdom and given her no share in understanding. When she arouses herself to flee, she laughs at the horse and his rider. We'll wait for that verse 19 now. So the ostrich, which apparently Job was familiar with. The ostrich doesn't really look like it's caring all that much about its egg clutch. And the Israeli people, the Middle Eastern peoples, kind of thought of the ostrich as being kind of silly. Well, God's response is, you think she's silly, but boy, is she fast. Who made her that way, Job? And then, since she can really run fast like a horse, he then asks about horses. Verse 19, did you give the horse's might? Do you clothe his neck with a mane? Do you make him leap like a locust? His majestic snorting is terrifying. He paws in the valley and exults in his strength. He goes out to meet the weapons. He laughs at fear and is not dismayed. He does not turn back from the sword. Upon him rattle the quiver, the flashing spear, and the javelin. Clearly, we're talking about a war horse here. With fierceness and rage, he swallows the ground. He cannot stand still at the sound of the trumpet. When the trumpet sounds, he says, "Aha!" He smells the battle from afar, the thunder of the captains and the shouting. And that was true. If you have trained a horse to be a war horse, then the moment the battle starts forming around the horse, the horse wants to get into it. The horse wants to do what he's been trained to do. Verse number 26 now. Is it by your understanding that the hawk soars and spreads his wing toward the south? Is it at your command that the eagle mounts up and makes his nest on high? On the rock he dwells and makes his home, on the rocky crag and stronghold. From there he spies out the prey, his eyes behold it afar off. His young ones suck up blood, and where the slain are, there he is. So now we start talking about hawks and eagles. And eagles, the eagles we're thinking about here are the, I think it's a golden or a brown eagle. They were much more looked at as birds of opportunity. So they could be prey birds, they could be predators, or they could be scavengers. And so Job is asked the question, can you make birds fly? Do you understand how that works? And do you take care of them in their life cycle, where they're raising their young way up high in the hills, and then they come down and get food for those from the battlefields, from places where they can get meat? Do you know how that works, Job? Are you the one that's in control of that? Chapter 40. He who is, said to Job, shall a fault finder contend with Shaddai? That is, with the Almighty or the God of the universe. And the contend word here is actually the word for lawsuit again, coming to court. Remember, that's what Job had said earlier. So God is using Job's language. So Job said, it's not fair that these things are being done to me by God, which, of course, we know God was not doing it. And so God's response is, okay, you're accusing me of doing bad things to you. Are you really going to prevail in a courtroom setting? He who argues with God, let him answer it. So, all right, Job, you asked for the opportunity to take me to court. Here's your chance. I've asked you how much you understand of creation itself and the mechanisms that are in place in the fallen world right now. What do you think? Do you understand all that stuff? Verse 3. Then Job answered he who is and said, behold, I am of small account. What shall I answer you? I lay my hand on my mouth, meaning shut my mouth. Verse 5, I've spoken once, I will not answer twice, but I will proceed no further. So Job's response is, I'm sorry, God, I spoke out of turn. In other words, I don't understand those things that you just talked about. No, I'm not in control. So I'm going to shut up and just listen now. And that's probably wise advice for all of us when we find ourselves in things that we don't understand, is just trust God, and if he wants to explain it, let him. Otherwise, just move forward with the things he's already told us we need to be doing. Verse number 6, then he who is answered Job out of the whirlwind and said. I didn't mention this the last time that phrase came up, out of the whirlwind. I am convinced that the Shekinah glory of God, the tower of fire by day and the glowing tower of fire by night, that led Israel out of the area of Egypt, across the wilderness into the promised land, that is a manifestation of God's Holy Spirit presence that is seen in other parts of Scripture, in other historical settings. This is one of them. Ezekiel is another example of it. The catching away of Elijah the prophet is another place. That when God presents himself in a physical manifestation, it looks as if there is this tower of cloud and fire. And so Job is seeing this, and perhaps his friends is seeing this manifestation of God's presence and speaking out of it, which is going to add to the awesomeness of this experience. And I use that word in its correct setting. Awesome means fearful. We are full of fear when we start meeting God in His true reality. The closer it is to Him presenting Himself in His fullness, the scarier it is, which is why we need a Savior to prepare us for that day in which we will meet God as He is, because our sin will be taken care of and there will be no fear of that. All right, let's introduce the next section of God's words before we close up for the day. Verse number 7, dress for action like a man. I will question you, and you will make it known to me. Will you even put me in the wrong? Will you condemn me that you may be in the right? So, Job, do you really think that I'm in the wrong? Do you think you're going to correct me as if I have punished you when you didn't deserve it? But of course, we know, because we've got the backstory, it's not God punishing him, but Job thinks it might be. So God has to address that. Have you an arm like God? Can you thunder like a voice, with a voice like his? Adorn yourself with majesty and dignity. Clothe yourself in glory and splendor. Pour out the overflowings of your anger and look on everyone who is proud and abase them. Look on everyone who is proud and bring him low and tread down the wicked where they stand. So, Job, are you God? Can you put on all this majesty and glory and holiness and bring judgment? Let's talk about that as we move forward tomorrow.